All right, well, Shabbat Shalom, everybody. It is good to see all of you that made it out here this morning, honoring Adonai's Shabbat. The Shabbat, the Sabbath, being the most frequent of the designated times of Adonai, that he said that we are to appear before him and hold a holy convocation, a set-aside convocation, on every seventh day. And that number seven is important to this message, so pay attention to this seven. Last week, we added, for the first time in a number of years, the opening of a Torah to read from the portion designated for that week. And everybody has been applauding to me. But what I want us to do more than applaud the fact that we actually did open the Torah and we did the readings from that is to create in our minds what doing that is picturing for us. Let it be a visual aid, if you will, helping us to move into a closer relationship with Messiah Yeshua. In John's Gospel, you know, if I got trapped on a desert island, I'd want Genesis, I'd want Isaiah, I'd want Zechariah, I'd want John, and I'd want Revelation. John's Gospel tells us something vitally important about Yeshua Messiah that we look at frequently in this congregation. But I want to look at it again this morning, taking it to the opening of Torah and reading from Torah. John chapter 1, please. Verses 1 through 3 and then 14. It says, "In the beginning was the Word." Pay attention to Word. "And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was with God in the beginning, and all things came to be through him, and without him nothing made had being. And the Word became a human being and lived with us, and we saw his Shekhinah, the Shekhinah of the Father's only Son, full of grace and truth." Again, focus here on that term, Word. The one referred to as the Word here was an individual who was with God, and yet was God, and he was there in the beginning. This is speaking truly of the Echad that we mentioned in the Shema that we just sang not too long ago. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Echad means a unity. Eloheinu is the plurality of God, who is a unity. And the Gospel of John opens by identifying the Word that became a human being and dwelled amongst us. Messiah Yeshua is also being the agent of creation. But the question comes up, why is the term Word being applied to him here in this particular case? And the answer is really at the creation itself. So let's go to Genesis, Bereshit, in the Hebrew meaning in the beginning, as John is stating here, and look and see what that says. Genesis 1, "In the beginning, Elohim created the heavens and the earth. The earth was unformed and void. Darkness was on the face of the deep, and the Spirit of Elohim hovered over the surface of the water. Then Elohim said, 'Let there be light.'" Look at that. "Then Elohim said, 'Let there be light.' And there was light." And there it is. Elohim said. When Elohim spoke, we got the Word. We got the Word. Elohim is the issuer of the Word. Elohim is the Word. And Elohim, that is the Word, became a human being and dwelled amongst us. Dwelled amongst us. Tangible. Touchable. Being given the option of being like him was his purpose in coming. And that other part of that option was so that we could accept what he did for us to take away our sin, so that we also might ultimately be like him by accepting what he did for us. And so, by that measure, be able to dwell with him in eternity as he rules forever. This is Elohim, the Creator, Elohim, the issuer of the Word, Himself the Word. And right here in this synagogue, we have the visual aid to take our minds to this every time we see it. What do we see when the Ark is opened every Shabbat? Our Torah scroll. What is in that Torah scroll? The words of Elohim. The words of Elohim, uttered by Elohim, who Himself is the Word. The Torah scroll is the very picture for us as the Word. And that Word, of course, is Messiah Yeshua. What else do we see as we open the Ark? Well, we see the Word of God that's in that Ark wearing the King's crown, which is another visual aid for us. That visual aid should help us get past the physical thing that we're looking at here. The Word Yeshua Messiah is coming back as King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And who is He coming back for? Us, those of us who have accepted Him as our only redemption. And last Shabbat, we opened our visual aid, opened our Torah scroll up, and looked inside at the words that have been given to us by the Word. Rabbi Scott gave a great message on that last week. But I'm telling you, get ready, because we're going to be doing more and more of that. You're going to be seeing that scroll taken out and opened up and read from more and more. And as we do that, I am imploring you that we need to again take our concentration off of what is physically going on long enough to see the bigger picture that's being given to us by Adonai through the Torah. When we see Adonai through the Torah, we're seeing Messiah Himself. And when we process that Torah, the Word wearing the crown, it's a picture of the Messiah Yeshua returning as King of Kings among His people, who will flock to Him just as we follow that Torah, that Word around the synagogue wearing the crown. So the question that seems to be prominent in many minds today is, when will the One who is the Word actually be returning? We're rehearsing for it. We're getting ready for it. When will it actually be? You know, we want it to be now. The fall feasts, of course, give us some time frame, but what's missing is the actual year. The actual year. We want to know the actual year. But, something that we are not, we have to remember that Adonai is, and that's patient. Adonai is patient, even if we aren't. And he always moves with a certain deliberance. And always seems to constantly give His people clues as to coming actions. And we're so busy saying, we want to see it now, we want to see it now, that we're not looking at the clues as they go flashing past us. And He's constantly giving us clues. I'm going to give you an example of clues that were missed. Judah, the southern kingdom, got a number of warnings, clues as to coming actions before they were ultimately destroyed by Babylon. These warnings took place, three of them actually, over 124 years. Our God is deliberate and He is patient. In 721 BC, Adonai looses Assyria on Israel. The northern kingdom, they loosed them because the northern kingdom had become unrepentant and the sinful condition that was in place could no longer be tolerated. The southern kingdom, Judah, right on the southern border, right on the edge of this, could not have missed this clue, this warning of what was coming if they wanted to remain sinful as had the Northern Kingdom. They couldn't have missed both the condition of the Northern Kingdom and that Adonai had them removed from the Promised Land. This removal being in direct opposition to Adonai's stated purpose, which was to be bringing his people into the land. The co-regents of Judah at the time of the Northern Kingdom's fall were Ahaz and Hezekiah, and after Ahaz's death, Hezekiah became the lone ruler, the lone king, and he brought on what I would call widespread religious changes, including the destruction of all of the idols, all of the idolatry that was taking place. He brought on revival. He brought on revival. This would have been around 715 B.C., and Adonai's response was that in 701 B.C., Assyria, under Sennacherib, was unable to capture Jerusalem. They'd been able to come in Assyria and take over the whole northern kingdom, but here now, with an obedient Israel in place, they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it. That's a clue. Remain obedient. And under Adonai's protective hand. Well, did Judah do this, seeing this picture, this clue? No. Hezekiah's son Manasseh, that followed him immediately as king, became Judah's most wicked and longest ruling king. Adherence to Adonai's covenant from there was off and on. Manasseh's son Amon was as bad as his father, but Amon's successor, Josiah, restored traditional covenant relationship based on Torah, based on a Torah that was discovered in a storeroom in the temple. Now just imagine for a minute how bad things had become in Israel that the Torah had been regulated to a storeroom in the temple. Josiah, like Hezekiah, had brought on a period of revival. But following Josiah, it was all downhill. Final three kings of Judah were all what my father used to call reprobates. Adonai had had it, and he loosed Babylon on Judah, Judah being captured in 597 BC. But this really actually was only serving as another warning, the final warning, if you will. The temple wasn't destroyed. The temple wasn't destroyed. So this final warning was good as long as Judah would repent and go back to worshiping him as they were supposed to in the temple. The final warning did no good. Judah remained that Babylon didn't take the first time. We're totally unrepentant. And the bulk of Judah was brought out in 586 when Adonai brought Babylon in a second time and destroyed the temple, which meant their chances were over. The time frame, actually, between the three warnings to Judah to get their act together was 124 years, and from the time of the first warning until he finally acted to totally take Judah out was 135 years. But again, what we have to see in this is that Adonai is patient. He spent 135 years trying to get them to repent so he wouldn't have to do what he did. He moves with a certain deliverance, 135 years, and he consistently gives clues as to his coming actions. Now then, I give you all this, bore you up to the hilt with it, so that we can look into a modern time frame of a patient Adonai moving with a certain deliverance and laying out clues for us that we can reference if we're paying attention. I want us to think back from this date, May of 2017. If we look back 120 years since 1897, there's that 7 again, Adonai has been moving on a path of restoration of his people. over this period of time, he has left us with a number of clues, interestingly, largely based around the number seven, seven being a number of completion. So in integrating this, it appears that Adonai has been moving on this path of restoration that would seem to point to a time of completion. How many of us are aware of what year this is on Adonai's calendar? Yeah, I saw one hand and I heard one person say that. Well, in spite of what the Gregorian calendar on your wall or sitting on your desk might say, this year on Adonai's calendar is 5,777. 5,777, three sevens are involved. This year, 5777, began last Yom Teruah and will continue until the next Yom Teruah, which will be coming on September 21st, 21 being the multiple of 7 again. 3 times 7 is 21. Now, there's a lot going on that we need to be paying attention to in this year 5,777 that should get our attention. For example, the inauguration of Donald Trump, the most pro-Israel president that we have ever had, has taken place in this year 5777. But are you aware that on top of that, that the day after the inauguration, the first full day of his presidency, was the year 70, month 7, and day 7 of Donald Trump's life? That adds up to 777. Interesting coincidence, isn't it? If you believe in coincidences. Also interesting among the things happening in this year 5777 is that this past Tuesday of this week, this past Tuesday, was the 70th anniversary of the modern state of Israel being in existence, put into being, allowed by vote of the UN, taking place in 1947. Also this month, coming up just ahead of us on May 21st, will be the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem in 1967. And this year is the 100th anniversary of the issuing of the Balfour Declaration concerning a homeland for the Jews made in 1917. This year, 5777, has a lot going on. So, how did we get to this point? It's like what we talked about earlier. It's a patient Adonai moving with a certain deliberance and leaving us with all kinds of clues as to coming actions. For all intents and purposes, we can begin with 1897. There's that number 7 again. A man named Theodore Herzl. How many of you know about Theodore Herzl? Yeah, I got a better response from this. Man named Theodore Herzl. We have to understand that it's always interesting who Adonai Elohim will use to have his will carried out. We always think that the most holy is the one Adonai is going to use. Ain't necessarily true. Theodore Herzl was a man born in Pest, now part of Budapest, Hungary. He was born into a secular family whose house stood next door to a synagogue. Herzl took pride in claiming that he was secular. He was political rather than religious. And Adonai grabbed Herzl, grabbed him to have Adonai's own ends met by this one, bragging about his lack of relationship with God. Dispersed Israel all across Europe had no political leaders at that time. Their leaders were all religious, mainly rabbis, and the rabbis wouldn't go near politics. Rabbis just wouldn't have anything to do with politics because politics weren't of God, according to their thinking. But Adonai open paths, political paths, using Herzl. In February of 1896, Theodor Herzl published a pamphlet entitled Der Judenstaat. German's not any good after 60 years. This translates into the Jewish state. And this took off. This pamphlet took off. See, Herzl wasn't the only one of that mindset, but most of the small groups scattered about had no direction. But this pamphlet pulled them all together, and it led to the first Zionist Congress being held in Basel, Switzerland, August 29th, 1897. Again, note 7. This focused the Jews of the world towards the recreating of a homeland in the old, on the old grounds of the Promised Land, where they had been ejected from. Herzl even went to the trouble to go to Istanbul to seek an audience with the ruler of the Ottoman Empire about being able to do this within the confines of the then Ottoman Empire in old Palestine. Such was the way, if you will, that Adonai used the one who proudly declared himself as an atheist. The point, though, is that this really became a movement, this thing that Adonai was doing for restoration in the year 1897. So let's again keep our eye on that number 7, because a major clue was dropped. The next major clue, I should say, was dropped as to what was going to happen in 1917. 1917, Herzl is gone, died young, age 44. World War I has happened, the Ottoman Empire is gone, and the British are about to occupy the Promised Land. Adonai moves again. This time, it was what is called the Balfour Declaration. Written simply as a letter to the second Baron Rothschild, who was the leader of the Jewish community in Great Britain, was done 20 years after Herzl's first Zionist conference. Intent was that this information given to Baron Rothschild would be passed on to the Zionist Federation of Great Britain and Ireland, stating the British government's position on a Jewish homeland. It was written by Foreign Secretary Arthur James Balfour. Listen to how this goes. His Majesty's government views with favor the establishment in Palestine of a national home for the Jewish people and will use their best endeavors to facilitate the achievement of this object. It being clearly understood that nothing shall be done which may prejudice the civil and religious rights of existing non-Jewish community in Palestine or the rights and political status enjoyed by Jews in any other country. This was written in 1917, November 2nd, 1917. And we look at what Balfour writes with an understanding that the British Empire was about at its zenith at this particular time. And Adonai used them to bring about his policy of restoration. 37 days following the Balfour Declaration, December 9, 1917, General Allenby accepted the surrender of Jerusalem without firing a shot. Now, 1 week after it was written, the text of the Balfour Declaration was published in the press, November 9, 1917. This same Balfour Declaration was later incorporated into both the peace treaty with the Ottoman Empire and in the mandate for Palestine. Note that mandate for Palestine was issued by the League of Nations, giving the British control of Palestine with the Balfour Declaration in place, stating the goal of Palestine becoming a homeland for the Jews. God's moving. 1917 was one of those dates when he really did things. 1917, Adonai reached out and used the world's greatest empire of the time to advance his plan. His plan had had its beginnings in 1897, 20 years earlier. We're not going to get into too much about what happened over the next 30 years, except to note that oil was being discovered all over the Middle East during that time, particularly in the 1930s. It had begun really in Persia back in 1908, but the 1930s there were oil wells popping up all over the Middle East, and this changed the Arab attitudes about hanging on to the land. So let's look ahead to the next move that Adonai puts in place concerning his plan. It's 30 years later, 1917 to 1947. Remember, Adonai is patient, always moves with a certain deliverance, and always lays out some things that give us clues as to what he's got going on. 1947, the League of Nations is gone. World War II is over. The Holocaust has left the Jewish world aching for a solution of a homeland where they can gather themselves together again and take measures that will help them develop their own safety. Plus, the British are now tired of this whole business of the mandate and want to end this Palestinian mandate. So again, I ask you the question, do we see the hand of Adonai taking the next step in his restoration plan? So in 1947, November 29th, 1947, the UN voted to recommend the partition of what was left of the British mandate after what has become Jordan had been taken out. We should note that this is the time that Adonai has laid his hand on the UN. He's moved up from an atheist to a powerful world empire to what was becoming a world government. The Arab world rejects what the UN voted to accept. But Israel accepts it. And Israel immediately puts a government in place, a provisional government, if you will, in place. Meanwhile, the British have set a date on which they would walk away from the Palestinian mandate, May 14th, 1948, Gregorian calendar. That would be IR 5 on Adonai's calendar. And what Adonai has set in motion through the UN came to pass at midnight on the Gregorian calendar, May 14th, 1948, the British stepped down. Now, bang, 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 things happened. The British stepped down. Instantly, David Ben-Gurion at that same time issued the We Are Israel statement, claiming that we are now Israel, this is who we will be forever. And Harry Truman, who was 6 hours away by time zones, within 6 minutes of this all happening, signed recognition of the new state of Israel by the United States into place, signed it in as representing the United States, which was now the singular most powerful nation on earth. And the Arabs attacked Israel from all sides. A lot of stuff happening. 10 prophecies, would you believe, were fulfilled at that moment? And maybe next week, Lord willing, I'll get into those 10 prophecies. But I want us to look at this one right now, Amos 9, if you will, 14 and 15. It says, I will restore the fortunes of my people Israel. They will rebuild and inhabit the ruined cities. They will plant vineyards and drink their wine, cultivate gardens and eat their fruit. I will plant them on their own soil, and listen to this, no more to be uprooted from their land which I gave them, says Adonai, your God. Take note of that, no more to be updated from their land. Think about it. 1897, 1917, 1947, Adonai causes the land to be committed to Israel. But Adonai, are you ready for this, is far from finished. Adonai is far from finished. Fast forward to 1967. In 1967, the Six-Day War brings the West Bank, and more importantly, Jerusalem, under Israel's control. June 5th through 10th, count both the 5th and the 10th, 1967, One source tells me that it happened in a total of 130 hours and 50 minutes. On paper, there was no way that Israel could win against what was stacked up against them, particularly from Egypt and Jordan. But the hand of Adonai was directly on this. This was part of Adonai's restoration plan. Miracles abounded. My gosh, we could talk for hours just on the miracles that came place in this. One of such is one that appeals to me directly. It's a place called Ammunition Hill in Jerusalem. Was captured by a lone Israeli scout who accidentally fell into a Jordanian trench at 2 o'clock in the morning and started shooting. The Jordanians, a whole batch of them, panicked and fled. This opened up a gap in their whole defense system, and that break would allow the capture of the old city of Jerusalem, including the Wailing Wall, only 30 hours later. We could go on for hours, as I mentioned, about Adonai's hand in this, but think about this. 1897, 1917, 1947, and 1967 are just clues that bring us up to this week, and this month with what Adonai is all about in his restoration plan. In 1917, the Jewish population of Palestine was just shy of 58,000 people. You realize that's only 10% of what's in Lee County today? Today, 100 years later, the population of Israel exceeds 8.6 million. Adonai's restoration plan is working, but he ain't done yet. On May 24th, IR 28th, will be the 50th anniversary of the reunification of Jerusalem under the control of Israel. This year, 5777 on Adonai's calendar, is a year of big time events. The celebrating in Jerusalem should be enormous, should be something else. You want a party? Head for Jerusalem in a couple of weeks. Now, there are a couple of things, interesting things to pay attention to as concerning this 50th anniversary taking place. Remember this President Donald Trump, who we talked about, whose first full day in office was his 70th year, 7th month, and 7th day of living? Remember a certain campaign promise that he made? I will move the U.S. Embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Are you aware as to who is going to be in Jerusalem, who is going to be there for the celebration of the reunification of Jerusalem under Israel? Our President Donald Trump. He's there for Yom Yerushalayim. He's going to be there for Jerusalem Day. Jerusalem Day number 50. Do we have an understanding that Mr. Trump has this bit of a flair for the dramatic? I posted a thing on the bulletin, posted three new things on the bulletin board. One of these is from a newspaper in Israel that's speculating that maybe he might make certain announcement while he's there. Now, I'm not saying what's going to happen. But we need to be paying attention because Adonai is not finished with his restoration plan. At the end of Adonai's restoration plan, Israel herself will be in perfection again. Israel herself will have been purged of all those in rebellion. And the land will have been purged of all those seeking to take control of it away from Adonai. And Messiah Yeshua will have returned to rule from where? From the capital that will be in place, and that capital in place is Jerusalem. His throne being in his temple mount. It will be interesting to see how all of this plays out. But the one thing that seems to be for sure is that Adonai is moving. His restoration process is moving ahead again. Israel is never going to be uprooted from the land again. Remember that? I'm going to bring you back. You're going to do all this, but you're never going to have to leave again. So it's going to happen in Israel, all of this. Let's pay attention. Let's pay attention to what's going on. See what the next move will be in Adonai's restoration plan. Because this is to be continued. Shabbat shalom, everybody.